This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Iced, a Danny O'Malley novel by Karen Marie Monnet, performed by Natalie Ross and Phil Giganti. Part 2. There can be no sound without movement. There can be no movement without sound. There is no stasis in music, only change. It could just as easily have been called the Song of Destruction. Seemed someone was feeling optimistic on naming day. The Book of Rain. 24. And the beat goes on. Cruce came tonight as he always does, stealing my sleep, parting my lips and thighs, leaving me near dawn in tangled bed linens, soaking with sweat from sex and shame. In the few moments of rest I snatch before rising, I have a terrifying dream. I walk to the hidden entry of the catacombs with the shuffling, mindless gait of a woman dead and risen from the grave. Marjorie blocks the door of stones that looks like any other wall, unless you are privy to its secret. She is voluptuously nude, hair and eyes wild, smelling of him, a scent I know too well. A banshee. She shows sharp teeth and a cackle and tells me he is gone. I am too late. With violence of which I did not believe myself capable, I shove her aside, and when she slams into the wall, she slumps down it and is still. Blood blossoms behind her head, staining red daisy petals on the wall. Bemused by the hostility in my heart, I pass through the door and shuffle on. The tunnels are pitch, forcing me to feel sightless passage along damp stone walls. This is not the underneath I know, dry and well lit, with everything in its place. In this dark, moist maze, moss grows thickly on walls, and bones crunch beneath my feet. The odor of decay couples with some fecund scent on the breeze. There is nothing down here to generate wind, unless a thing stirs that cannot possibly be stirring. I pull my wrapper closer and thrust myself forward on hobbled feet with stunted, stumbling steps, blind in eye, but not purpose. I pray, and with the whimsy of dreams, the gold cross I wear upon my neck begins to glow. I do not deserve such comfort in this dark night of my soul. I shuffle for time uncounted through darkness, until finally I reach the chamber wherein the erotic, deadly prince is iced. There, no darkness preys, no moss grows, no water trickles. There are no bones in this forbidden place, only flesh. Extraordinary, exquisite flesh. The walls have been gold-leafed in my absence. The chamber is radiant with brilliant light. Cruce is still caged. Nude, towering, wings unfurled, he snarls with animalistic rage. Iced solid. I weep with joy. My fears were for naught. Upon trembling legs, I hurry to his cage, celebrating that it holds. One of the bars is missing.
Stop vibrating.
Royden plucks a paper out of the air and slaps it back down on his desk. I wonder if he cleans it. How many tushes have been on that thing? I'm never touching it again.
Can't help it,
I say around a mouthful of candy bar. I know what I look like, a smudge of black leather and hair. It happens when I get really excited. The more excited I get, the more I vibrate.
Now there's a thought,
Lore says.
If you mean what I think you mean, you want to shut the fuck up and never think it again,
Royden says.
Just saying, boss,
Lore says.
You can't tell me you didn't think it too.
Five of Riordan's dudes are in his office, and it's like standing in the middle of heat lightning, closed in with them. Jane is here, too, but I'm totally ignoring him, because, like, if I didn't, I'd have to kill him with my bare hands, and that would get messy. Then Riordan would probably make me mop his feckin' office. I never understand half of what these dudes are talking about, and don't care. You can touch me if you want to, I say to Lore magnanimously. I'm so pumped on adrenaline and excitement that I'm feeling downright sociable. I poke one of my shoulders toward him. Check me out, It feels really cool. All heads swivel my way. Then they look back at Riordan. He doesn't own my fucking shoulder. Why are you looking at him? Lore guffaws but doesn't reach for my shoulder. I don't know why. I like touching myself when I'm vibrating like this. It vibrates me twice. If I was really cold and started to shiver, I'd be vibrating three times. So what the fuck are we going to do to stop this thing? I beam. We got plans to make and implement. I thrive on times like these. They bring out my best. I'm a riser to the occasion kind of girl. I'm feeling so excited and generous about having such a wicked cool adventure to live that I'm finding it hard to be mad at folks right now. We got an enemy that's bigger and badder than anything I've seen. Fucking A, it's good to be alive. 'Cause like, for a sec there by the dock, I wasn't sure I was going to be. I wasn't sure any of us were. Speaking of back by the dock, my mood shifts and I glower. I still don't have my sword. It got iced. The warehouse is now filled with iced unsealy. The ceiling covered with stalactites. The floor deep with stalagmites. My sword got frozen in a stalactite way up high, and the place was way too deadly cold for anyone to enter. Like freeze you to death instantly cold. We had to leave it stuck there in an enormous icicle. Lore ordered Castello and Fade to stand guard until the scene thawed enough to retrieve it. Last I saw, the two unseelie princes were still hanging around too. If Christian was there, he was staying out of sight. No sign of Dancer. I didn't want to leave, but Lore threatened to potato sack me over his shoulder, and seeing how he can do it as easily as Raiden, I didn't see any point in making myself miserable. It's your fault, I tell Riordan. You should never have let Jane keep my sword. Now who knows what's going to happen to it? If the scene explodes like the others? I trail off, because I can't stand the thought of my sword blowing up into alabaster smithereens.
That's the least of our problems,
Riordan says.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Lord just told you, I say crossly. What else do you want to know?
I want to hear it from you.
I tear open another candy bar, and around mouthfuls repeat most of what Lore said about the fog and the slit widening. The feeling of panic we all experienced. How all of a sudden none of us could hear a thing, like we'd gone deaf. Then this thing that was twice the size of your office sailed out.
Thing.
Dude, Lore didn't describe it any better. I mean, come on, dark mass about the size of two semis side by side.
Try.
I frown, thinking, then brighten. Did you ever see the movie The Blob? It was like that, only it was oblong. And I don't know if it was slimy and it levitated instead of rolled. And I don't know if it was dense, but it didn't look like a shade. It was nothing like a shade.
The Blob.
Old movie, from way back in silent movie times.
It's not that old,
Jane says.
I saw it when I was a kid.
Which was like, way back during silent movie times, right? You shouldn't even be talking to me. Don't talk to me. You shouldn't even be here. I should kill you. You're lucky I'm not killing you right now. You left me for dead. I look at Riordan. And you let him. Feckers, all of you.
I went straight to Chester's and told Riordan where you were.
Jane says.
I wasn't going to let you die. I didn't like leaving you. I needed the sword. I couldn't afford to pass up the chance.
He told Riordan where I was? I said don't talk to me. And that worked out real well for you, didn't it? How many years do you think it might have taken you to kill a few hundred unseelie? I glare at Riordan. And you didn't say nothing about him telling you where I was. You didn't come neither. Didn't he care that I might have died?
Boss sent me for you the second Jane showed up,
Lore says.
You were gone by the time I got there. I was following your blood trail, but it disappeared. Texture,
Riordan says to me. You mean did it have any? Not that I could see.
Then what happened?
It moved into the warehouse, all ponderous-like, and belched white fog out everywhere, and we couldn't see a thing. It iced the whole place, worse than any place we've seen yet. I mean, dude, the ceiling sprouted stalactites, and the floor is covered with stalagmites so thick you can't even walk in there. We never seen anything like that at the other scenes.
Postulate on why it got iced worse.
I'd pondered that on the way back. There was only one significant difference I'd been able to isolate. There were a lot more people and Fey at this scene than any we've investigated. There were hundreds of Unseelie in cages, and they all got frosted. It's possible more ice was necessary. Or maybe the thing had more juice today for some reason. We got ice too, but it was only a thin layer, and once we moved it cracked. We kept re-icing the second we stopped moving, so I started doing jumping jacks. And like sheep can't think for themselves, everybody copied me. Then they were all standing in the street doing jumping jacks. I got worried the commotion might make it turn around and come after us, but the thing never even noticed us. It was like we were fish and it wanted chips. Or maybe we weren't even noticeable as food. Then it vanished. Another of those slits opened inside the warehouse, and all the white fog got sucked into it, and the thing followed. Once it closed, we could hear again. Sort of.
Clarify.
There wasn't any noise. Nothing. You'd think the ice on all those Unseelie might have popped or cracked a little like ice does when it settles, because they were warm before they got iced. But they didn't. When we walked, our shoes didn't sound right on the pavement. When we talked, it was flat. It was worse than flat. There was a feeling to the silence. A really bad feeling.
Elucidate.
Riordan says. I just did. I think you mean speculate. Lore snorts. Riordan gives me a look. Don't even know why I bother answering him sometimes. Maybe I like to hear myself talk. I've got a lot of interesting things to say. You know how sound is really movement, and vibration is what makes noise? Which is, like, total contradiction to its effect on things, because when the world went dead quiet, it was still moving while making absolutely no noise. But what I'm saying is, after it departed, things never got back to normal. It's like things weren't vibrating all the way. Or maybe the sound waves weren't bouncing off things the way they should. Or maybe the things the waves were bouncing off weren't right.
Narrow it down.
I shrug. Got insufficient data to form conclusive deductions.
How long from the time it appeared to the time it disappeared?
That was the weird thing. It felt like it was happening in slow-mo, but I figure 2 seconds from start to finish. It came, it iced, it vanished. Sometimes I don't have the most accurate sense of time, because I'm in a kind of in-between fast-mo and slow-mo and don't even realize it, which makes things around me seem to be happening more slowly. I'm pretty sure when it came, I was so wound up I was half freeze-framing. I look at Lore, who nods.
2 to 3 seconds at most, boss. The fog rushed out, the thing came, the fog sucked back in, and it was gone. I assume it was Fey,
Riordan says. Unequivocally, I say.
You're a She-Seer. That means you should be able to get a read on it like Mac did with the She-Seer-Do.
I could, to a degree.
Intelligence.
Enormous sentience. Stupefying. I wish I'd felt the Unseelie King. I'd have something to compare it to.
Emotion.
Non-discernible. No malevolence. I got the impression destruction was a byproduct, not a goal. I notice everyone's looking at me funny. Dude, I add, and flash my best street urchin grin at the room in general. Fucking A, was it ever cool. Got to watch my tendency to geek out when I get excited.
You think it had a goal?
There was, I don't know, purpose to what it was doing. I could feel it. Some Fae feel simple when I focus on them with my She-Seer sense. They're dumb, acting on instinct, capable of random destruction. Then there are things like Papa Roach, that Fae that breaks down into little parts. I remind him in case he missed that especially scintillating edition of my Danny Daily. Papa feels structured. It has plans. So does the Ice Monster. But there's a big difference between Papa and the Ice Monster. Papa has a beady little mind. This thing is vast in construct and purpose.
Motive.
I sigh. No clue. Just that it had one.
No idea why it chose that place or why it ices things.
None, I say. It didn't even touch anything as far as I could see. It just kind of hovered above it all. Unless the fog is like its fingers or something, and it sucks folks' life force up with it, and inadvertently ices them in the process. No way around it. I need more time with it. Got to feel it out longer. Jane starts cursing, and says nobody's going to be spending more time with it, because it's too dangerous. And even Lore looks disturbed by the idea of another encounter with the Iceman. Which reminds me. Why were you afraid? I say. I didn't think anything scared you, dude. Lore gives me a cool look, like I didn't see what I saw, and says,
What are you talking about, kid? Only thing I was worried about was how pissed Boss was going to be if the thing killed you.
Bull. I know these dudes. They don't care about anything but themselves. And he was freaked, which means it was a threat to him somehow. I want to know how. I want to know what Riordan's kryptonite is. I know a few universals, like, he who can destroy a thing controls it. Not that I get off on destroying things, but when you get backed against a wall, coming out with both guns blazing is pretty much your only choice. I want enough power to void a contract, enough to quit my job, permanent-like. I'm ready for retirement. I want enough leverage to get Joe out of the Kitty Sub Club, assuming she ever wants to leave. She will, the day he chooses someone else. In my estimation, that won't be long at all. Half an hour later, I'm outside Chester's, skidding holes in the rain-slicked pavement, pacing in hyperspeed, munching power bars to keep myself juiced. I'm waiting for Riordan to get done with whatever the feck business he said he had to take care of that couldn't wait, so we can get on with our investigation. He told me to sit tight inside the club, but me hanging around inside Chester's without my sword ain't real likely, and he should know better than to expect it. Then again, without my sword, I'm not straying far either. I hate waiting for backup, but I want it. The Unseelie Princess freaked me out. I got a major thought brewing about them, an idea I despise, but have to consider for its end result. Right now, I'm keeping it back-burnered, where it can't burn me too much. I got so many other thoughts exploding inside my head that I expect a few are poking out my ears. One second I'm so excited to be living in these times, I almost can't stand it. The next I'm a nervous wreck, because my people are out here in these streets, and they don't have any clue we got a big scary ice monster turning parts of our world into a deep freezer. I got to get the word out fast. But what do I tell them? If you see a shimmery spot in the air, run? That's assuming they even notice the shimmery spot before they're iced. Trouble is, I know folks. You can tell them to run all you want, but there aren't a lot of people that will, until they believe they're in major danger, which is usually too late. They gape like cows, and if you don't know it, cows gape a lot. There used to be a big herd out by the Abbey where I tested my speed and navigating abilities, after Ro took me in and I was drunk on my new freedom. The cow pasture was a great place to practice freeze-framing on a dime, because, A, cows move and are unpredictable, therefore hard to map like the real world, and B, if I hit a cow, it usually hurt me more than the cow. I had a riveted bovine audience the entire time. They'd chew their cud and swing their big heads back and forth, watching me like I was cow TV. If all I had to do was chew regurgitated food and watch other cows all day, I'd be riveted by me too. Heck, that bored, I'd be enraptured by a fly battle on a cow pie. But back to folks. Shimmery spots aren't terrifying enough to make them flee. And there are some folks, like the See you in fairy chicks that hang at Chester's 24/7, sporting new Papa Roach bug-sized waistlines, trading sex, competing with each other to see who can eat enough Unseelie to turn immortal, and get to hang with the Fae first, that would deliberately linger if they saw Shimmery Spot, just because it was, like, pretty. Gah! Some chicks should be shot, put out of everyone else's reproduction pool. I need a couple of pictures to put in my daily, to show peeps the gruesome finality of what the ice monster does. I need to get over by Dublin Castle, shoot a few frames. Then I need to get to TDD headquarters and fire up the presses. I love printing my dailies. I got double the reason to get one out fast now. After seeing the Unseelie Prince's wanted posters, folks are no doubt worrying their butts off about me. I need to reassure them. Let them know I'm still on the job. You must be Danny. I turn and pop up on my heel and keep turning. I'd turn all the way to bumfuck China if I could. I spin in a full rotation, so she's at my back again and stand there, trying to compose myself. I don't want to look at her. I don't want her to see my face. I didn't expect this. Wasn't ready for it. Feck, I'll never be ready for this. It's one thing to know she's out there somewhere, along with Mac. It's another thing to have to face her. Feck, feck, feck. I paste on a mask, turn around, and begin the pretending game. And you're Rainy Lane, I say. Same beautiful blonde hair as her daughters, even though they were both adopted. Same pretty demeanor, classy feminine deep south. She's walking around in chilly, gloomy-ass late afternoon Dublin, dressed like somebody's going to care she's color-coordinated and accessorized. I guess Jack Lane does. Unlike most married folks I've seen, not that I've seen a lot, they seem to be crazy about each other. I saw them in Alina's photo albums. I saw them in Max. I've seen pictures of this woman holding her daughters when they were small. I've pored over photos of her beaming at their sides when they were grown. Like she's beaming at me now. Like she doesn't know I killed her daughter. I guess she doesn't. I guess the last time Mac talked to her was before she found out it was me that took Alina to that alley to die. For a second, I get this stupid vision of how she'd be looking at me right now if she knew, and it kicks the breath right out of my lungs and leaves me standing there, dumb. I have to clamp down all my insides so I don't puke. She'd hate me, despise me, stare at me like I was the most disgusting, horrible thing on the face of the earth. She'd probably try to claw my face off. Instead of this mom love bullshit thing glowing in her eyes like I'm her daughter's best friend or something, not her other daughter's murderer. I thought Mac was the worst thing I'd have to face one day on these streets. I'm smothered in a hug before I can dodge it, which shows how discombobulated I am. On a good day, I can dodge raindrops. I forget myself for a sec, because she's got soft mom arms and hair and a neck you want to cling to. Worries melt on mom bosoms. She smells good. I'm enveloped in a cloud that's part perfume, part something she baked lingering on her clothes, and part some indefinable thing I think are mother hormones that a woman's skin doesn't smell like until she's raised babies. It all combines to make one of the best scents in the world. After my mom was dead and Ro took me to the Abbey, I used to whiz by the house every couple days. I'd go into Mom's bedroom to smell her on her pillow. She had a yellow pillowcase embroidered with little ducks along the edges, like my favorite pajamas. One day the smell was just gone. Every vestige of it vanished without a trace. Not one tiny little sniff left for my super sniffer. That's the day I knew she was never coming back. Get off me! I eject myself violently from her embrace and back away, scowling at her. She beams like one of Riordan's supercharged flashlights. And stop beaming at me. You don't even know me. Mac told me so much about you that I feel like I do. Well, that's just stupid on your part. I read the latest Danny Daily. Jack and I hadn't heard of those bugs. You've been doing a wonderful job keeping everyone informed. I'll bet that's a lot of work for you. So? I say suspiciously. I hear a but coming. But you really don't need to anymore, honey. You can relax and let the adults take over. Yeah, right. Weren't adults in charge when the walls fell? And haven't they been in charge since? Doing a real bang-up job, aren't you all? She laughs, and the sound is music to my ears. Mom laughter. Melts me like nothing else can. Guess because I heard it so rarely from my own. I think I made my mom laugh 3 times, all before I transported for the first time. Maybe it happened once or twice after that. I tried. I'd memorize funny things I saw on TV while she was gone. I'd watch musicals, learn cheery songs. Nothing I did was right.
Rainy Lane is looking at me with more approval than my mom ever did. Go away. No, wait, don't. You can't be out here alone. I'll find somebody to take you back wherever you go. What are you doing walking around Dublin alone? Don't you know nothing? There are all kinds of monsters in the streets. It's going to be dark soon. Somebody needs to knock some sense into her. Aren't you the sweetest to worry about me? But you don't need to. Jack's just around the corner parking, honey. There's too much debris in the streets to park any closer. I keep telling Mr. Riordan he needs to clean up outside his club, but he hasn't gotten around to it yet. I suppose we may have to help him out with that. He's a busy man, you know, a lot on his plate. Crime is time-consuming, isn't it? She laughs, and I get my first suspicion she might just be totally clueless. Aren't you funny? Mr. Riordan a criminal. That nice man. She shakes her head, smiling like I'm just the funniest thing. Yep, clueless. Danny, honey, I've been hoping to run into you. Mac has been, too. Why don't you come have dinner with us tomorrow night? Yeah, right. Skewered Danny on the menu, served up with a side of veggies. Not. Would all three of them take turns beating me to death once Mac ratted me out? There are some people I'd love for you to meet. There's a wonderful new organization in the city that's been doing fabulous things, bringing about some real changes. I shoot a big, melodramatic, beleaguered look at the heavens, then back at her. You can't be talking about We Care. Please tell me you're not talking about We Care. Why, yes, I am. You've heard of us. She's beaming again. Us? Gah! Please tell me you're not part of them. You can't be part of them. Do you know they hate me? No, we don't. We Care doesn't hate anyone. We're all about rebuilding and helping. Whatever gave you that idea? We. She's slaying me. Is Mac part of them too? Dude, like, maybe the way they copied my paper, took over my posts, and printed all kinds of lies about me? I happen to know for a fact that top individuals at We Care are eager to meet you. They think as much of you as Mac does. Gee, great. So they want me dead too? Top individuals. Lovely. They can get in line behind Christian, who's behind the Unseelie Princes. They think you could be a tremendous asset. I think so too. I'll give her a look. You might want to recheck your facts. I think you're missing a few. Folks in charge of organizations don't consider me an asset. Never have. Never will. I hate organizations. Folks got to be free, able to breathe and make up their own minds about stuff, not be fed a party line. Ritual numbs the brain. Repetition is grass for sheep.
Mrs. Lane, so nice to see you again,
Riordan says, and I almost fall over. Not only didn't I hear him approach us, he's being polite. Riordan is never polite. I squinch up my face, studying him. Dude, you feeling okay?
Never better.
Why are you, like, pretending to be nice?
Mr. Riordan is always nice. He was a lovely host while we stayed at Chester's.
You didn't stay at Chester's. You were hostages. What is wrong with everyone that they can't see things for what they are?
He and his men were keeping us safe, Danny. The Shisadu was targeting people Mac loved.
Was the door to your room locked?
Dude, that makes you a hostage, I say. Our door was never locked.
Huh? Yeah, but did you even know how to get out? He's got those tricky panels.
Mr. Riordan showed Jack and me both how to operate the doors.
Huh?
Yeah, but there were guards outside, keeping you in.
For our protection. We were free to come and go. We chose to stay.
The city was dangerous when the book was loose. Jack and I are very grateful for Mr. Riordan's help during those difficult times.
I scowl at Riordan, who's wearing a smug-ass smile. He probably worked some kind of spell on them. like the kind of thing he did to me in the Hummer when he forced me to take the candy bar from him by muttering strange words. He makes people puppets, empty-headed slaves, not me. Do you know he's forcing me to work for him by holding Joe hostage? I tell Rainey. She needs to wake up and smell the coffee. You mean that lovely young waitress? I've seen the way she looks at him. She's crazy about him, Rainey says. And that pisses me off even more. Mac's mom can tell Joe's stupid crazy about the psychopath just by looking at her. Gah! Just gah! On top of it all, said psychopath has Rainey so fooled there's no point in even talking to her anymore. Not that lack of a point would shut me up. Do you know he has private clubs under Chester's where...
I just spoke with Barons.
Riordan cuts me off.
Mac's on her way to meet you, Mrs. Lane. She should be here any second now.
I give him a suspicious look. He's probably lying, and he knows perfectly well I won't risk finding out. Rainey gives me a warm smile. Danny, she'll be so glad to see you. She's been looking for you for weeks. I'm sure she has. I lock down my mental grid to freeze frame, make like folks on Gunsmoke, and get the feck out of Dodge. 25. I don't know who he is behind that mask.
What are you doing?
Why do you care? I got belligerence stuck in my craw, and I don't even know why. Sometimes just standing next to Riordan makes me feel that way.
Because if there's no point in what you're doing, you're wasting my time.
Dude, got eyes. I'm collecting evidence. Finally, I've been trying to get out for a second look at the exploded scenes for just about fucking ever, but things keep coming up. Like me almost getting killed. Oh, and me almost getting killed again. There's never a dull moment in the Megaverse. The ice monster would freak me out a lot more if my world hadn't been jam-packed with monsters of all kinds since pretty much my birth. Big, small, human, not.
In Ziploc bags.
I think they're glad.
They look impartial to me.
I start to snicker, then stop myself. This is Riordan. I hate Riordan. Lying, deceitful dickhead. Tricking folks into thinking he's really nice so I look stupid. Think my sword's unfrozen yet?
No.
I stoop and scoop. I know a thing or two about myself. I see a lot. But sometimes there are small things going on that even I miss. Ergo, my impartial ziplocks. I fill one at each scene. Go deep into the frigid center of the exploded debris. Scoop up handfuls of icy detritus. Stuff it in, and label it all neat and tidy-like. Later, me and Dancer will sift through the Ziploc bags and look for clues. I pull a Sharpie from my pocket and write on the white strip, Warehouse, North Dublin. Then I tuck it carefully away in a backpack slung over my shoulder. Collecting my Ziplocs makes perfect sense to me.
It doesn't make sense. You could examine the detritus thoroughly right here at the scene.
Dude, do I ask you to explain yourself?
Kid, are you ever not prickly?
I root around in the rubble, making sure I got some of everything, keeping my back to him because sometimes looking at him is more than I can stand. Sure, like when I'm not around a prick. We investigating or having a conversation all personal-like, because I got business to take care of today, and you're wasting my time. It's going to be dark soon.
Observations.
I got two. The scene blew to smither feckin' rains, and everything's still cold.
Give me something I can use.
I wish I could, boss, but this is... Well, this is a mess. I rock back on my heels, shove hair out of my face, and look up at him. The sun's nearly level with the horizon, right behind his head, making this weird halo effect around his face. As if. I'm surprised he doesn't smell like brimstone. He probably has a red pitchfork and hides horns under his hair. Making it weirder, the sun's got a sparkly gold tint to it. Thank you, fairies, for changing everything in our world. And he looks... Oh, who cares how he looks? Why am I even noticing? I look away, focusing on my investigation. We got a fay that appears out of a slit and arrives with a lot of fog. It ices everything in its path, then disappears back into another slit. Sometime after that, the scene explodes. But why? That's the big question. Why is it icing what it ices, and why does the scene explode afterward?
And why does it take varying amounts of time for the different places to explode? I feel the ground with my palm. It's freezing. There's a chill that hasn't dissipated. I wonder if it ever will. Might be kind of cool if it didn't. You could clear the ground, build a house, and never need air conditioning. It'd suck in the winter, though. I survey the scene. Where the warehouse used to be are piles of crumbled bricks and mortar, and splintered framing, with twisted girders from steel racking everywhere, some bent, some poking straight up at the sky. Chunks of unseelie flesh are plastered to pretty much every... I smack myself in the forehead. Holy priceless collection of Etruscan snoots, they're not moving! I exclaim. There's a choking noise over my head somewhere.
Etruscan snoods?
I glow quietly inside. Some accomplishments mean more than others. I am officially the shit, now and forever. Dude, watch your question marks. I just pried one out of you.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Admit it. You lost your eternal feckin' composure.
You have an obsession with a delusion about how I end my sentences. What the fuck are Etruscan snoods?
Dunno. It's just another of Robin's sayings. Like, holy strawberries, Batman, we're in a jam.
Strawberries.
Or, holy Kleenex, Batman, it was right under our nose and we blew it. There's another choking noise above my head. I could go on for hours. Check out this one. It's one of my faves. Holy rusted metal, Batman! The ground? It's all metal. It's full of holes. You know, holy. I snicker. Gotta love the dudes that wrote Batman. They had to sit around cracking themselves up all the time. Or, holy crystal ball, Batman! How did you see that coming? I look up at him. He's staring at me like I have three heads. The truth dawns on me. Holy prostrate rugs, you lied! You've never even read Batman, have you? Like, not one single issue. You never even watched an episode on TV. That was like your only redeeming quality, and it wasn't even true. You've been pretending we're superhero partners, and you don't even know the first thing about Robin. No wonder Riordan's no fun to hang with. I'm so disgusted I can't stand it. I skirt my irritation and get back to the important stuff. The unseelie parts are motionless, dead as the humans. Look at them. Unseelie don't die. Nothing but my sword and Max spear kill them that dead. Unseelie are immortal. You can slice and dice them with human weapons, and the pieces will flop around forever. These ain't flopping. This thing is killing them dead, and we never even noticed. Preconceptions. They trip you up every time. When something explodes, you expect to see dead things. Maybe there's something to my idea it's after folks' life force. Kind of like the shades, sucking them empty, but instead of leaving husks, it leaves the whole shell of their bodies iced. And notice something else. None of the pieces, human or unseelie, are rotting. Why is that?
I'll be damned.
I know, right?
And you didn't notice this before.
I glare at him. You didn't either. And I tried to recheck scenes twice, but you made me sit in your office while you did paperwork. The third time I was thinking about rechecking a scene, I stumbled on a fresh one and almost got exploded myself. I stand up and walk away to get a good bird's eye view of the destruction. I pull out the new phone I grabbed to replace the one I smashed and snap a couple pictures. So? I say crossly. Where to next? As we head for the church where I almost died, I realize Riordan's been keeping me so busy asking the questions he wants answered that I never get around to asking any questions I want answered. So, what happened to me when I got frozen that night? When I came to, Dancer was there with you and Christian. Talk about unexpected. How did Dancer get there? Who saved me?
I got you out of the church or you would have died right there on the floor.
You're the one who took me into the church to begin with, and didn't warn me what would happen if I touched something. You're why I almost died, dude. So who saved me?
I had to take you out slow, or you would have had afterdrop.
Yeah, but did Dancer tell you about afterdrop? 'Cause that sounds like something he would know.
Why did you laugh right before you lost consciousness?
Death's an adventure,
I lived big. Rigor mortis makes your face stick. So, who knew how to thaw me?
Death's an insult.
At least an affront. I agree. Think my sword's unfrozen yet? Maybe we should go check.
You're too young to laugh when you're dying. And no, I don't think your sword is unfrozen. Focus.
Ain't too young for nothing.
In some societies, that would be true. Different places, different times. You'd be old enough to be a wife and mother.
That's a horrible thought. So, Dancer saved me.
I didn't say that.
That's how I know. Maybe we could use hair dryers to melt the ice around my sword.
You need to get rid of him. He's a liability. Forget about the fucking sword. I'm taking care of it.
I whirl on him, fists at my waist. He's an asset. He's my best friend. You don't know nothing about Dancer.
Nothing is the key word there, because that's what he is. Nothing. He's just human.
Bull crikey. Dancer's the shit.
He wears glasses. I bet that works out real well for him in battle. No. Wait, he doesn't battle. Never will. Too fragile. One poke with a sharp stick and his guts would spill all over the street. Sayonara, human.
His guts aren't spilling anywhere. He's super smart and he's super, super smart.
What the fuck kind of name is Dancer, anyway?
And he can build anything. He made my shade grenades, and he made me this net of lights that charges just off me moving, and it totally outperforms the Mechalo. Besides, all Batman had was a cool costume, and the best toys and the smartest ideas, and everybody knows he's the greatest superhero of all time. Besides, I'm just human, too. All of a sudden, Riordan's standing 1 inch away from me, hand under my chin, holding my face up to his.
You'll never be just anything. A tsunami can never be just a wave.
Get off my chin.
I like that about you. Waves are banal. Tsunamis reshape the earth. Under the right circumstances, even entire civilizations.
A blink.
You're going to be one hell of a woman one day, Danny.
I never knew my jaw was flexible enough to hit the pavement. My arms aren't even long enough to pick it back up. Catch flies in it. My butt, you could drive a truck in my mouth right now. Did Riordan just, like, compliment me? Has hell frozen over? Are birds flying backward? It makes me so uncomfortable in my own skin, I feel like skinning myself. A three-quarter moon is behind his head and his face is all shadows. Fucking A, dude, I know that. Everybody knows that. I'm the Mega, as in short for Alpha and O. I shrug him off me and push past him. He laughs.
You might have to fight somebody else for that title.
Get a move on, I say crossly. I'm so behind on work I can't stand it. You only got me for a limited time tonight. I need to get a daily out. Folks need to know about the Iceman. I lock down my grid and slip into freeze frame.
You're going to get the boy killed one day, Danny.
Riordan says behind me. Rot in purgatory, dude. Batman never dies. Dancer won't either. When we arrive at the church, I roll my eyes. Five Seelie are standing in front of the demolished cathedral, amid rubble, shredded hymn books with pages everywhere, like they rained down from heaven, chunks of organ and miscellaneous debris. Think my sword's unfrozen yet? I say, making a fist around the empty space where my sword hilt should be. I see Sifton Fay, and all I can think of is how I don't have my sword. Of course, I have that thought pretty much every other second anyway.
Kid, you're a broken record.
Well, it might be. The Seelie are talking, and although they know we're here, they completely ignore us. I ignore them, too. Despite them being so beautiful, I have to pry my eyeballs off their faces. I'm not making the same mistake I made with Valaine. Getting sucked in by how gorgeous they are. Thinking they're any different than the Unseelie. Just because they're gold and velvet and iridescent-eyed and hunky. Christian's hunky, too. He keeps dead women by his bed. I'm feeling major juice coming from at least one of them, but they're muting it. That worries me. Fae don't mute themselves unless they're up to no good, trying to pretend to be something they're not to make us less worried, when we should be really, really worried. Feckin' Fae, I wish they'd all just go away.
Then what will we do for excitement?
I snicker.
He's got a point. I pull out my phone and snap a picture of the scene, planning to get my Ziploc out next, skirt the ferries and go to work. All of a sudden, there's a disturbance in the air in front of me. It takes a sec for the dust to settle in my brain. One of the Fae just tried to sift over to me to do who knows what. Riordan beat it to its destination and they collided. The Fae looks like a pissed cat, eyes narrowed, spine twitching, iridescent eyes flashing fire. I've seen this one in Chester's. He has a taste for human women, and the stupid sheep are nuts about him, with his tight leather pants and open shirts and sleek golden hair and skin. Riordan's standing between it and me, legs spread, arms folded. He's a mountain. Nothing's getting past him that he doesn't want past him. It pisses me off I need him there. With my sword, no Fae would dare bum-rush me. I'm used to more respect than this. This bites. The Fae says all stiff-like.
His Highness does not permit his likeness to be captured in small human boxes. The runt will give me the box.
Runt? Moi? I'm at least 5'3" with my tennis shoes on. I'm not a runt. I'm young and still growing. And we call them cameras, dickhead.
Whose Highness?
Riordan says.
Ours. Yours. All he suffers to live. Give me the box or the runt dies.
You just try, I say. Better fairies than you have. Worse ones, too. They all tasted delicious. With ketchup. And mustard. And a side of onion rings.
Should have left it at ketchup,
Riordan says.
Less is more sometimes, kid.
To the Fae, he says.
Queen Avio was never our true queen. She is gone. We have a new leader. Our sacred light, King Rajan. The Fae matriarchal,
Riordan says.
Were. We have decided it is time for a new rule. If not for the flaws of a woman, so many of our race would not have died and still be dying. If not for her idiocy, the abominations would not have been freed. She was not even Fae.
He sneers.
She began her life as one of you. The indignity of it, to have been ruled by a mortal masquerading. Enough, Velvet.
Rajan says.
We do not explain ourselves to humans. Kill the runt and bring me the box.
I'm not a runt. My hand closes where my sword hilt used to be.
Missing something, runt.
One of the courtiers standing with the new king says, and they all laugh. Guess everybody has seen the feckin' wanted posters. I take a mental snapshot of its face and mark it for death. Someday, somewhere fairy. Velvet was just getting started airing his grievances.
She forced us to grant humans rights to which they were never entitled. No more. It is a new rule, a new age. We are no longer weakened by a weak queen. I said enough,
Rajan says.
If I must tell you again, it will be the last thing you hear for 10,000 years. You will not enjoy where you pass them.
I give Rajan a conspiratorial wink. You're going to give him a time out, dude. Velvet looks horrified.
If you are fool enough to address King Rajan, you will do it thus and in no other manner. My king, liege, lord, and master, your servant begs you granted leave to speak.
Wow. Totally delusionary there.
Good luck with that,
Riordan says.
She doesn't beg to speak or do anything else. You can lock her up, down, and sideways, and it's never going to happen.
I'd beam at him. I had no idea he thought so highly of me. Then he's gone. So is Velvet. I stand there a little uncertain, because Riordan didn't telegraph a single intention before he and the Fae disappeared. I'm not even sure who took who. Or if one took off and the other chased. All I know is both of them are gone. I shift from foot to foot, looking at Rajan and his remaining 3 cohorts, and he looks at me, and I try to think of something to say. Best to come up with is, so why are you guys here anyway?
Kill the runt,
Rajan says. I yank out 2 candy bars and cram them in my mouth, wrapper and all, and give them a super strength chew that makes the wrapper explode so I can swallow some chocolate and get a rush fast because I've got no sword, and who the feck knows where Riordan went? A crunch, swallow, spit out the wrappers, and lock down my grid to freeze frame, when all of a sudden Riordan's back. He's standing right in front of Rajon.
In these streets.
He says so cool-like, I almost expire from the sheer coolness of it.
I'm king, liege, lord and master. You are the it.
Then he dumps Velvet's dead body at his feet. 26. It's the hard knock life.
You did me a favor. Velvet was an annoyance,
Rajon says.
He spoke too often and too much, saying little of consequence.
Riordan looks at the king's remaining courtiers and says,
I'll do you three more favors. Just say the word. Wrong one or right one doesn't matter to me.
The courtiers sneer at him, uneasily. We might have postured for hours and never gotten to the position of strength Riordan established with a single action. I'm learning from him. I'd never tell him that, though. Rajon opens his mouth, then closes it, not entirely sure Riordan didn't just say that he was going to kill the other three courtiers if he said even one more word. Smart dude. I'm not sure Riordan didn't mean that, too. How the feck did he kill Velvet? I study the Fey corpse, but see no obvious wounds. No cuts or... Wait a minute. Is that a few drops of blood on his shirt? I sidle left for a better view, but Riordan moves like there's a tether between us, conveniently blocking it. I got no doubts he left so I wouldn't know. He's so feckin' secretive. Does he have my sword somewhere? Did Mac loan him the spear? Never. Obviously, he's got some other weapon that kills Fay, and I want it. The prick. He's been holding out on me big time. When I lost my sword, he could have given me whatever he just used. I'm so pissed I could spit. He knows how to kill Fay. No wonder he's so fearless. He's faster than me, stronger, and has a Fay-killing weapon. I pine for the days I was the biggest, baddest superhero in town. Abruptly, I got graphic sex images in my brain. I'm hot and uncomfortable in my jeans. Ugger it all! Rajon is a prince, a death by sex fae. He's the one I sensed muting himself so as not to draw attention to his little entourage. But now that the crap's hitting the fan, he's going to use any weapon at his disposal. I guess he figures to mess me up to get to Riordan. But Rajon is staring at Riordan like he expects it to be working on him. Huh? I thought they were hetero, and their killer eroticism only worked on the opposite sex. I realized that was a stupid assumption. It's just that I never saw the Unseelie Princess around men, and Valaine always kept it muted around humans. There's no reason, whatever the mechanism, that it wouldn't work on both genders.
On your knees, human.
Rajon tosses his golden mane imperiously.
You will crawl before your king.
Riordan laughs.
Is that all you've got?
I hang back, listening, not about to get closer. It's all I can do not to start stripping. Oh, bugger, I am! My coat's on the ground, and I'm pulling out my shirt! I make a sound of protest, but it doesn't come out like that at all.
Turn it off,
Riordan says, without even looking at me.
You're distressing Danny. No one distresses Danny but me. I said kneel,
Rajon says, like he can't believe Riordan is still standing there.
And I said fuck you. Turn it off, or die.
Rajon cuts it off so suddenly, I'm shivering, cold and miserable, like I was just sunning by a pool, then got an iceberg dropped on me.
Why are you here?
Riordan says. Rajon says tightly,
what the fuck are you?
Darn good question. I wonder it myself.
If you answer me wrong one more time, you're death.
He kicks Velvet's lifeless body. Rajon grimaces. Unlike Unseelie, Seelie expressions make sense to me. They're similar to ours. I guess because they've spent so much time preying on us.
Something is killing our people. I didn't know you counted the Unseelie as yours. It has visited places other than Dublin. It has killed Seely, too. It's been in Faerie twice. How dare an abomination enter our realm? Never has an Unseely been suffered in Faerie.
The temperature drops, and I tense, searching for a shimmer in the air. It was already colder near the church than in the rest of Dublin, but now the pages of the hymnals scattered around the street glisten with a thin sheen of ice. I see Riordan looking around, too. Snow starts to fall. I realize Rajon's temper is doing it at the same time Riordan does. I brush snow off my bare shoulders, then a jerk, embarrassed. I was so riveted by stuff happening that I didn't realize I'm only wearing my bra. I scoop up my clothes and yank my shirt over my head. I hate Faye. To Rajon, I say. Cruis lived in Faerie for hundreds of thousands of years, and you guys never figured it out. There's an Unseely in Faerie for you, sitting right next to your queen. Wait, I snicker. I forgot. She wasn't your queen either. She was human. Dudes, stupid much.
I will speak with you,
Rajon says to Riordan.
When you make the runt be silent.
I puff myself up, waiting for Riordan's defense.
Be quiet, kid.
I deflate.
You're certain it's Unseely?
Riordan says to Rajon. I said it was, I say indignantly.
Unequivocally.
Like, I even used that exact word.
What is this abomination?
Riordan says.
We do not know. We have never needed to know about our foul brethren. Yet you're worried enough about it that you're here, in a dark Dublin street, the new king of the Seely himself.
It seems to mollify Rajon to hear himself called the new king of the Seely. He looks away and doesn't say anything for a second. Then he shivers.
It brings final death to our kind.
Like the spear and the sword, I say.
I told you to shut her up.
Answer her.
She cannot understand what it is to be Fey.
Riordan doesn't say a word. He takes one step forward, and Rajon immediately takes one step back, all smooth, like they're doing a choreographed dance.
One day, human.
You might want to rethink what you're calling me.
I will crush you beneath my heel and...
Until that fictitious day, you will answer me when I speak.
He steps over Velvet's body, closing the distance between them. Rajon steps back.
How does final death differ from what the sword does?
Riordan says.
Your puny brains were not fashioned to grasp the greatness of being Danu.
Riordan crosses his arms, waiting. Dude's got some serious presence. I want to be like him when I grow up.
You'll have no brain at all in 3 seconds. 2.
Rajon says tightly.
The spear and sword end immortal life. They sever the connection that binds our matter together and scatter it to the wind.
Tell me something I don't know.
Even if we die, that of which we are fashioned is still out there, blowing.